Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, voters in Newfoundland and Labrador choose a liberal minority government.
It is important that we work together for the good of all the people of Newfoundland and Labrador.
Canada will launch a digital charter to combat online hate speech, misinformation, and electoral interference.
What we're seeing now is a digital sphere that's turned into the Wild West. And it's because we, as governments and as industry leaders, haven't made it enough of a real priority.
Andrew Scheer takes aim at Justin Trudeau as he outlines his plan for the economy.
When times are good, he spends. When times are bad, he also spends. Remember the 2015 election when Trudeau looked the country straight in the eye and said he would balance the budget by 2019? Well, it's 2019, and surprise, surprise, the budget has not balanced itself.
It's Friday, May the 17th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle Herald, Dan Legere. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Mark.
Let's start with the breaking news about the election in Newfoundland and Labrador. Many people were expecting it to be close, and it was. It's a minority government for Liberal Premier Dwight Ball. It's not a change in government, as some people had been expecting, and has happened in several other provinces in the last year. But it is there was an appetite for change, and certainly there was a signal sent with this outcome, wasn't there?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you put it well, that there is an appetite for change out there, I think, among Canadians and among voters. We saw it, going back to the BC election, the Quebec election, which elected a party for the first time. The CAC party had never been, didn't even exist a few years ago. We saw the outgrowth of new parties or emerging parties like the Greens and the People's Party in New Brunswick. So I think you're seeing really not a short term, but perhaps a longer term willingness of Canadian voters to look beyond the traditional in the sense of the Conservatives and Liberals and to a lesser extent the NDP. And I do think it's worth noting in Newfoundland that the NDP did have something of a resurgence. They only won three seats, but they're a player again in Newfoundland after a long time in the wilderness. So there's a lot going on, I think, in voters' minds. And we've seen a succession of super close elections too, Mark. Other than Ontario, perhaps, but in other jurisdictions, it's been pretty close. So it is something is rumbling out there in the electorate, that's for sure.
And what, if anything, does it mean for federal politics in Atlantic Canada? Because, of course, last election in 2015, the Liberals swept all the seats there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't think I would be given the Victoria Cross of bravery for predicting that the Liberals are not going to win 32 out of 32 the next time. You just can't run the table like that twice in a row. In 2015, the Liberals won a dozen seats in Atlantic Canada that are otherwise considered to be pretty hardcore conservative areas. So I expect most of those, particularly in New Brunswick and some parts of Nova Scotia, to return to the Conservatives in the next election. I think it's going to be important to see how competitive the NDP is down east here. And I do think you're going to see the emergence of the Greens as being more of a factor. And I'm not going to predict anything great that way, but the Greens, I think, are starting to be taken a bit more seriously across the country, including in this part of it. Now, that said, the fate of a provincial government as it relates to the federals, it's hard to connect. And I can say, I think, with confidence as someone who's lived in Newfoundland in the past, that everything's different in Newfoundland anyway, and we shouldn't take too much of an indicator over there for the rest of the country.
All right, let's turn to some other stories. The Prime Minister yesterday unveiled a digital charter to address online issues, including potential foreign interference in elections. Do you think it's sufficient to respond to rising concerns in that area?
I don't know, but they have to do something. I mean, they got to get moving on this because, Mark, the social media, the election interference, the propaganda, misinformation, fake news, all that is running wild and out of control right now. And, you know, governments everywhere are slowly waking up to it, and they're way, way behind. I mean, technology and the internet and the online world is moving so fast that no government, more or less by definition, can keep up with that rapid pace of change. And it is skewing our politics. And I mean, I think a lot of Canadians want to return to a more civil type of politics. Many of us are disgusted with what they see from the States every day. And I think people here, you know, they responded to that in 2015 when Justin Trudeau said he would return civility to Canadian politics. That didn't last long, but I think there is still that desire among Canadians for something better than what we're getting now in our politics.
Andrew Scheer issued the latest of his policy announcements yesterday. It was in the area of the economy. He talked about some things that a Conservative government would do, including building an east-west energy corridor across the country. And he also went on the attack, naturally, about the economic policies of the current government.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's two roles for an opposition leader in the pre-election period that we're in, and one of them is to set out with some clarity what the party's position is on, you know, given bunch of issues. And obviously the economy is extremely high on that list. The Scheer's problem in this is that generally the economy is doing not that bad. I mean, even Alberta's is rebounding pretty hard and coming back into its own. It still has a long way to go, mind you, but there is improvement right across the country that way. A million jobs have been created. People are going to think about that, and Scheer has to find ways of making the situation seem much worse and making his ideas seem much more practical. So, you know, he's talking about getting rid of budget deficits, but somehow miraculously without cutting anything, which is the, you know, tired old thing we've heard a million times. And this east-to-west energy corridor, I went to bed last night thinking about that, and I got up still trying to figure out how is that different from a pipeline corridor? It isn't. It's exactly the same, because that's what's going to be in the corridor, is a pipeline or pipelines. So I just don't think that's going to fly. In Quebec, if there, as they say, there's no social compact, there's no agreement among the population in Quebec to have pipelines crossing their territory, what, this is going to change it because you're going to call it a corridor and not a pipeline? That's another vacuous promise that I don't think anyone is going to fall for.
It's not very often that a Canadian Prime Minister comments about domestic issues in another country, including the United States. But yesterday, Justin Trudeau responded to what's happened in Alabama regarding abortion law. He referred to that as backsliding, and he said he was concerned about it. What do you make of the Prime Minister's comments?
Well, I think you'd find if I haven't had time this morning because it's early to go back to Confederation and find out every time a Canadian Prime Minister has commented on U.S. domestic politics. And I think you'd probably be able to correlate that to the proximity of a Canadian election. So, obviously, Justin Trudeau was on the lookout. And I think women's rights advocates and women in general, most of them I know anyway, are really alarmed by what's going on in the U.S. You know, if they can do it in Alabama, a group of 25 male legislators can ram through an anti-abortion law like they have in Alabama, why wouldn't they be able to do it just about anywhere else? So, but I think this is, Trudeau took a beating with women voters over the Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott affair. And I think he's trying to reassert his feminist credentials here a little bit by commenting in a way that doesn't cost him anything, because, you know, you can talk all you want about what's going on in other places, but you don't have to do anything about it. And so it was a relatively low-cost way for him to make the point of his feminist credentials.
Yeah, and presumably also, without saying it out loud, hint at the potential for backsliding in Canada if the wrong government were to be elected, one that happened to have some social conservatives in its midst, for example.
Yes, exactly. And the Liberals were making great hay of the appearance by, I think it was 12 conservative MPs at an anti-abortion event recently. And So, you know, it is simmering a little bit below the surface right now, and Trudeau helped to bring it closer to the surface. But I think once we get into full-on election campaign mode, you're going to hear a lot more about those types of issues from especially from the Liberals.
Just a quick final thought from you, Dan, on what's going on with the two Canadians detained in China and now arrested. Obviously, everyone's concerned about this. The government has indicated its concern. The opposition is calling for action. It's difficult to talk about this because we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but obviously the government is working on this.
Yeah, and, you know, it is doubly complicated, Mark, because it's so obviously political. I mean, the Chinese just got around to actually starting a formal legal process, which is not anything like the formal legal process that a Canadian would recognize. But that they've actually gone ahead and taken this next step, I guess, indicates that they're, you know, showing they're going to carry this through wherever it goes. I feel sorry for the two men who are being held in custody. They're pawns in a much, much larger game that involves people like Donald Trump and President Xi. You know, so it's gone beyond all that. These guys are caught in the middle. And I'm sure the Canadian government, you know, not just because they're Liberal, any government in Canada of any stripe would be doing everything it could and can do to get those guys out of custody and returned to their families. So, this is a long way to go. The Chinese don't care what the Canadian public thinks, and that's a big problem. They're not running any candidates in the next election here. But it is political. It is between the two countries, and I'm sure Canada will continue to press for their release. But as long as there is political hay to be made by the Chinese for holding them, they could be there for a while.
All right, Dan, great to have your thoughts on all these topics this morning. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you later.
That's Dan Legere, author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle Herald.
We're doing our analysis in order to make sure that we consider this issue in the appropriate fashion. And, of course, all the factors will be taken into consideration.
Now let's take a look at what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In the Globe and Mail, Wesley Wark argues Canada shouldn't jump on the Huawei ban wagon. Wark writes, "As a long-standing security partner with the United States and with an economy dominated by the U.S. market, Canada will have to find a way to work with them on their Huawei approach. But it should be our approach, rooted in our own calculations of economic benefit and security risk mitigation. We cannot have a sensible policy that is based on a blind following of the United States." In the Toronto Star, Chantal Hébert argues, Justin Trudeau has a choice to make about Quebec's secularism debate. Hébert writes, "On the day that Quebec's premier introduced the bill, Justin Trudeau came out swinging against it. Since then, a cone of silence has fallen on the federal capital, and appeals for a forceful federal intervention have been few and far between. If Trudeau has been keeping his finger on the Quebec pulse, he will allow that ship's next port of call to be a court of law and not the federal campaign trail." At CTV.ca, Don Martin argues, "It's a charade, but question period is the only answer." Martin writes, "It has become a charade of staff-crafted questions clashing with well-rehearsed non-answers, a desk-thumping spectacle, making no pretense of conveying useful information. Still, question period remains the only encounter of political accountability between the government and opposition forces. Until there's a better way to crank the thumbscrews on government accountability and put the onus for doing that on opposition forces, question period is the only answer." Now let's look at what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will return to Ottawa from Paris. International Trade Diversification Minister Jim Carr will take part in a teleconference to talk about his trips to Chile and France. Employment Minister Patty Haidu will make an announcement in Edmonton. Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein will speak at a school in Hamilton. Transport Minister Marc Garneau will make an announcement in Westmount, Quebec. Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan will be at the Royal Military College in Kingston to present graduating students with their degrees. Environment Minister Catherine McKenna and Minister of Families Jean-Yves Duclos will make an announcement in Quebec City. Public Services Minister Carla Qualtro and Veterans Affairs Minister Lawrence McCauley will take part in a commemorative ceremony in Victoria. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Friday, May 17th. Tune into Primetime Politics Weekend on CPAC for coverage of all the week's events. Our podcast returns Tuesday morning. Have a great weekend and happy Victoria Day.